This is the Digital Savage Experience Podcast, hosted by Roman Prokopchuk, bringing you all things digital marketing, tech, business, and motivation. What's stopping you from becoming relentless in all aspects of life? Are you ready to become a digital savage? Let's get into today's episode.
Hey everyone, this is Roman Prokopchuk, and this is the Digital Savage Experience Podcast. Today I have with me Dustin Reichman. He is a serial entrepreneur and an online marketing expert. Thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, Roman, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for jumping on. So tell me a little bit about your journey. How did you get to where you are today?
Sure. Yeah, I'll start with my first career, which was civil engineering. So that's got an engineering scholarship to go to school. It was kind of my path out of an abusive and poor household. So I thought that was it. I thought that was, you know, the highest pinnacle possible to have a professional career, and did enjoy that and did it for 15 years. While doing that, I had numerous side hustles and got into digital marketing pretty heavily in around 2015, and decided at that point that I actually wanted to leave engineering. Except my wife was a stay-at-home mom and we have three kids, so that was not an easy transition. So over the course of the next 2 years, we worked really hard and made that happen. So in 2017, I left engineering full-time and got into full-time entrepreneurship. And for me at that time, it was basically taking any possible digital marketing gig I could get. So I had, like, my dentist was a client, my real estate broker was a client. I was helping, like, a guy online that did, like, barbecue supply store websites, like, you name it, I take it on and build websites, do Facebook ads, kind of learn as I go. And it worked and it paid the bills. And in that time, I met a local butcher who was opening a shop in our town. And we became good friends. He was about my age. He's a third generation owner of this family business that actually originated in my hometown, which is a pretty fun story in itself. But he had a local brick and mortar that I helped him market. And then he had these snacks that he had created, like, literally in the back of the kitchen. He built his own smokehouse and he was making these, like, healthy snack sticks, like kind of like a healthy Slim Jim. He called them Fire Creek Snacks. He said, "Hey man, you're helping me a lot with the store. I sell these here. I sell these at, like, golf courses and stuff around the area. Do you know how to sell online?" I said, "I do." I said, "I've never sold an e-commerce business, but we could try it, you know?" So I built a Shopify store. And so in about 2019, we spun that up. It's called firecreeksnacks.com. And then we got pulled into the wholesale brick and mortar side of that whole world. And 2019, traveled to a dozen trade shows all over the country and learned a lot, went through a lot of stress, and we had a lot of momentum heading into 2020. And of course, we all know 2020, there were no more trade shows, and a lot of the in-store sampling we were doing was bad, and we hadn't really built up our Shopify store the way we should have. So in summer 2020, we were like, "I don't know what we're going to do." I lost half of my marketing clients because in my state, in Illinois, they were shut down for 6 weeks. So I was like, this is not a great time. And Fire Creek wasn't doing so great. And so I decided to try something different. And I got on a podcast. So that was the first podcast I'd ever been on, was summer 2020. It went really well. I had a great time. We got some direct sales and had a few relationships come out of it. I was like, this is pretty cool. You know, I'm, like, home stuck with my wife and kids. Like, I can go in my office and do podcasts. And so I pitched another show and another show and got a lot of momentum with it. Fire Creek ultimately grew to a 7-figure business without paid ads through these kind of partnerships, podcast guesting, and then a lot of subscription box placements we were doing. It was really effective for us. And so last year, 2021, I started getting a lot of inbound interest. People like, "Man, you've been on all these shows. I've heard you. I like your story. I like the offer you came up with. How do you do that?" So I started taking on one-on-one business coaching clients and spun up a whole different business called Simple Success Coaching, which has now evolved into running 90-day mastermind groups with higher-level entrepreneurs, teaching them podcast guesting and how to make sales and do strategic things on the backside of that. So And I didn't even mention my very first business, which still exists, is called Engaged Marriage. And that's what brought me online back in 2009. And so that grew out of marriage ministry my wife and I were doing. So while I was an engineer, I created that website, and marketing that website, writing a book and trying to sell it, I learned how to do digital marketing, which led me to my business partner at Fire Creek Snacks, which led me into podcasting, which led me to Simple Success Coaching. So tune in next year to see where I'm at next. But I'm actually really enjoying where I'm at. And that's the evolution from engineering to marriage to meat sticks to marketing to podcasting.
Yeah, it kind of comes full circle. Do you think at the time you made the transition to entrepreneurship, you think you would have done it earlier if it was kind of just you, no kids? Maybe you were dating your wife at the time. You think that would have transpired differently in terms of those variables?
I do.
Is that something that you considered in terms of that safety net?
I do. Yeah, I think it definitely delayed things. In hindsight, I said 15. I was actually there 17 years. And in hindsight, the sweet spot to leave would have been about 10 years in. I think I had accomplished what I wanted to accomplish in engineering and kind of fell flat after that. And that's also right around the time I launched my first online business and was starting to really have momentum with it. So, yeah, I mean, in hindsight, I don't regret it. That's also the time period that we started having all our kids. So it was a lot going on at once. But yeah, had I not had a family, I definitely would have made a leap earlier because I'm pretty scrappy and I'm pretty risk tolerant. My wife is the opposite. And so I had to respect that. And we had to kind of find the happy middle ground, which has worked out great for us now. But at the time, I think it did make me pause a little longer than I would have otherwise.
Yeah. And I think making those kind of, business choices or trying as many things as you can, as the younger you are, because you have less kind of responsibilities, less potential overhead in terms of, you know, mortgage payments. Potentially, you still may be living at home. Obviously, that age has gone up. I would say in the last 5 to 10 years, people are living now like normally into their 30s at home, where it was like, you know, you're still 30 and you're at home. So when you have the opportunity to try all these things without overhead and potentially find something that you're passionate about and that you're excited about and then that you're good at, I think it's important to kind of take those risks as early as possible. I mean, obviously, now I'm still doing and learning because that's the kind of person I am and having little side hustles and stuff. But it's a lot harder where you have responsibilities, have to take kids to certain things, have other, family obligations as well. So I think that's important.
Yeah, for sure. And we were, hopefully, because I have a 17-year-old son and a 15 and 12-year-old, hopefully they're not staying here till they're 30. But I understand that has become a lot more normal. Back in the day, I guess you could say with us, like my wife and I were high school sweethearts. And so we had dated for a long time. I actually got married when I was 21 and she was 20, which to her parents, you know, they got married when they were 19 and 18. So that was totally normal. But now that seems really kind of almost bizarre. But it is what it was. And we really enjoyed our earlier years. We had kids about 4 or 5 years in was when we first had our first child. And yeah, so no regrets with all that. But and who would have ever thought? I mean, in February 2020, I thought I was like going to be on the trade show circuit selling Fire Creek snacks for a long time. And then circumstances outside of my control obviously changed that completely. And now it's that's like a huge blessing. I'm so glad that pivot happened for me. I love what I do now so much more. I hated traveling to trade shows and I love podcast guesting and podcasting. And so it's I feel like there's a plan in place for me and I just have to have some faith and realize that you have to take the next step before the one after that will appear. So in hindsight, like these dots connect, those kind of strange, odd things I've done in my career, but you could never predicted this, you know, from my 2005 when I was a professional engineer and that's all I ever wanted. So.
Yeah, and the market is the market. A lot of people think and try to control everything around them. And, you know, even if you plan everything out, things don't turn out the way you want it to be, either bad or good. And you have to figure out, I always say everything in life is a lesson or a blessing. So you have to kind of take it with what it's giving you and then kind of run with it. I mean, anyone that either started a podcast or was looking to, you know, to get on a podcast as a guest and share their expertise, their life experiences, you know, overcoming something, 2020 was kind of the right thing to be timed with, because everything in terms of media personalities, podcasts that were in person, different shows, like everything was thrown out in terms of formal processes to really, like, you have to go through a PR agency or a publicist even to get a guest, like from my end. So, I mean, you had a lot of more opportunity to, you know, offer what you had to a potential audience, and that pitch be taken a lot more seriously. And based on all interviews moving remote, it's not as much lift. You know, all roles really were remote, so you're at home already. So even if you're doing something, you can, worst case, take a break here or there for 20, 30, 40 minutes. And then, you know, you have a piece of content that you can also reuse and cut up, and something that you own and something that takes up real estate online as well. And, you know, if you're selling something, if you're, you know, branding yourself, I think audio is also a superior medium, because it's really, in my opinion, the only medium that you can really multitask with. You can, you know, drive and listen to something, work out and listen to something, and still have somewhat broken down concentration in both things you're doing. But obviously you can't do really the same in terms of reading, looking at images or video. So I think that's important as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, like I said, I didn't really have the experience pre-2020 of what it would have been like to, you know, to approach podcasts. But it was like perfect timing for me, because that first show I got on is called The Side Hustle Show. It's a pretty decent sized show with Nick Loper. And I had a really interesting pitch for him, because the way it was framed was how to partner with local businesses and bring their products online, which was like a huge topic, because a lot of local businesses were struggling or closed. They needed to sell online. And if you had an online marketing acumen, like, you could go do that and you could partner with local businesses. That was not why the whole Fire Creek thing came up, because it was, you predated it by a year and a half, but it was a great story. And it was a very useful framework and lesson for how to actually have a partnership like that successfully. And so it was, you know, I literally the first 12 shows I pitched, I got yeses, which is pretty unusual. And a lot of that had to do with preparing well and really thinking creatively about what would serve their audience. But I think, to your point, part of it was timing, right? It was, they were kind of all needing more content, and they were now not going to conferences. They weren't speaking and meeting people there to invite for guests. So it just created the right conditions. And I think you said something a minute ago that you can't control the market. You can just react to it. And so, it's the first time I really thought about that entering this world in the summer of 2020 was kind of a golden opportunity for me.
Yeah, I think I did 80 interviews on other shows and media publications between like 2020 and 2021.
Wow.
And recorded about 100 episodes for my show. And then inadvertently built a community on a social app, which I was popular at the time. It kind of phased out, Clubhouse, social audio.
Yep.
So I started a community with a bunch of people on there. It turned into a co-hosted show. That show, you know, went like 15 episodes, and then we kind of parted ways in terms of different, you know, focuses. But it's just one of those things where, one, I never thought I would be podcasting, because if somebody says podcasting, they don't know all the intricacies behind, you know, behind the scenes.
Right.
So I think it was a little intimidating on, like, you know, where's the audio go, or what type of equipment should I have, or, you know, how do I edit audio itself, or how do I promote it, which the promoting wasn't that big of a deal because I have a digital marketing background that I got into, you know, late 2008, 2009. So it wasn't really that big of a deal. But if I could do it earlier, I would have, you know, told myself to do it a few years earlier. And I think anything you discover or anything that kind of brings you joy, you don't necessarily regret, but if you have the opportunity to do it sooner, you could have, and kind of the value that it adds. And most of the time, it's one of those things where, you know, PR and attention costs money for the most part, unless you go viral via social, or you know, write something in terms of an article or something that adds value and it organically takes off in search and, you know, gets picked up by other publications, gets syndicated. But, you know, with an interview, usually majority of the time, if you're pitching the right shows, you're going on there for free. You're giving your expertise, you know, your time, value to that audience, and, you know, you're having a permanent feature, hopefully, if the show, you know, decides to stick around. They'll probably stay on, obviously, Spotify and Apple Podcasts and stuff regardless, but a free advertisement per se. So, you know, usually within the title of the episode and the show notes, if, you know, you mentioned some of the stuff you mentioned in terms of that business that went to online. So anybody looking for it can then easily find it, then easily build other things. And then I saw the power of podcasting is also SEO value. So it's a great way to link build, drive referral traffic as well, because you're adding usually a link in the show notes to your website. And that in turn kind of, you know, robustly boosts the company website or the e-commerce site you have and builds the site authority. So I saw the value in that and started incorporating that because it's a great organic way to kind of, you know, gain referral traffic and, you know, kind of boost the relevancy of your site as well.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, like for Fire Creek, I kind of followed the ladder there and ultimately ended up on the official Shopify podcast. So I literally have a backlink from shopify.com/firecreekstacks. So that's kind of tough to beat from an SEO standpoint. And a few things you said too, I just to reiterate what my own experience backs up is, you know, when you're listening to a podcast, you are typically multitasking, but it's like a mindless activity, like you're running or you're driving. So actually I feel like you almost get into like a meditative state, and it's almost like the deepest, you know, being directly in someone's ears and not having that direct link into their brain is almost like hypnotic. And I think in a positive way, if you're trying to create an emotional connection, if you're trying to promote something, and it's also typically longer form, right? And so 30, 45 minute interviews, you're a digital marketer, you know, the whole cycle is know, like, and trust. And if you're using content or if you're using ads, you can do that, but it might take 70 touch points before someone knows you, likes you, and trusts you. You can accomplish that in 30 minutes if you do a good job on a podcast and really connect with the audience and add value. So I feel like from a marketing asset, it's really tough to beat. And then, like you said, you can repurpose it. It's got SEO value. It's long tail. So kind of like YouTube videos, like I still have people reach out to me that from interviews I did in 2020, they're just finding them because of a keyword, or they found a new show they liked and they're looking through the archives for different topics. And so, yeah, I think podcast guesting is really special. I actually don't yet have my own podcast. So when you're talking about all the technical things, I respect that very much. My approach has been, you know, if I have a message to share, something I want to promote, why not pick the audiences I want to be in front of? Someone else has already done the work to aggregate those people and have their attention. And I can just go speak value into them and do that and then do the next one and do the next one. So I do have a vision for a podcast I want to do next year. But to this point, I kind of tongue in cheek say I've kind of become a professional podcast guest in some sense.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things where like you look at how many there are in terms of YouTube channels. I would say, I don't even know at this point, tens of millions, hundreds of millions.
I think there's like around 50 million. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's up there. I mean, the official number of podcasts on Apple Podcasts, I believe, is like around 6 million, but majority of those are kind of shells that haven't really produced an episode in like 60, 90 days, and right. Some have less than 10 episodes. So out of that, in terms of active podcasts, you're looking at maybe 200, 250,000 out there in the whole world. So getting on shows and even having a show, that aspect of it, it's valuable. It's also valuable in terms of relationship building. So maybe you're reaching out to somebody, you can't make a connection just because you're not necessarily adding value. And maybe the person you're reaching out to, their time is not that anyone's time isn't important, but they're very busy. Maybe they're, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 figure entrepreneur, a startup founder, you know, an athlete, what have you. But you have a podcast that makes sense for them. It kind of took off and it's getting their word across. So you reached out and, hey, I have the show that I think my audience would love in terms of what you'd be sharing. And I think you'd be a great fit. Now that conversation and kind of that barrier to build a relationship and make that connection is a little bit easier because you're actually offering something of value.
Yeah. I mean, I joke, although it's almost entirely true, that like I feel like all of my professional network has come from being a podcast guest, sometimes very directly, sometimes less directly. You know, sometimes it's a LinkedIn connection that someone found me through a podcast and we connect on LinkedIn and then that goes deeper, etc. But I've had some, we talked earlier about kind of all the tactical reasons, like the tactical benefits, SEO, direct sales, long-term sales, those sort of things. But I always to your point, I was talking about relationships are definitely the 10X factor in this whole thing. Like, I went on and sold some meat sticks and that was great, but there's certain shows that really crazy things happened because I was on that show. And so one example, in fall 2020, I was on a show called Bigger Pockets Business. Lots of great relationships came out of that. But one in particular was a young guy. His name was Daniel. He reached out to me and he said, "Hey, I'm an up and comer. I got a YouTube channel. I do real estate investing. I have a corporate job, but I loved your story and what you did with Fire Creek." He's a mountain biker, so he kind of liked the whole ethos of the brand. And so we had a couple of Zoom calls, and then he said, "You know what? I work at Walmart. I'm in finance. Like, I don't know anyone. I've been working here 2 years." But to his credit, he found the company directory or whatever he needed to do. He got the email address of the meat snacks buyer at Walmart, introduced us in an email and said, "Dustin's got a really compelling story. They're an up-and-coming brand." So I got a one-hour private Zoom call with like the largest retailer in the world, the meat snacks buyer for them. And that was great. Well, then that guy left the position, but put in a word for us to the replacement. So she came on board in 2021, and then she reached out and said, "Hey, I'm talking to brands that are kind of in our Rolodex over here, and you're one of them. Just want to see where you're at and what, you know, kind of the status of the company." And we weren't ready yet for that kind of opportunity. Then in spring 2022, she reached back out, and they have an open call where they invite American small businesses to Bentonville, Arkansas, to kind of be part of the Walmart, you know, culture and rah, rah, rah sort of thing. It was a great experience. And we met with her again, one-on-one in person this time. And we came up with a concept of a packaging that she could really get behind. So fast forward again, like 6 more months, because this is a longer sales cycle. We got a yes. Like, we're going into Walmart. We don't yet have our initial store count, but we'll be able to say our brand is in the largest retailer in the world. And that literally would have never happened had I not been on that podcast. I didn't get on the podcast thinking anything about Walmart or like retail opportunities. I was there to sell snack sticks to the audience that was listening. But that's the kind of stuff. I've got numerous stories like that, that just like crazy unicorn things that have happened, not directly, but indirectly from things, from podcast guest appearances that had to have happened for that to happen. Like, we wouldn't even have thought about being in Walmart. We would have never had a relationship to get our foot in the door, any of those things. And we had Daniel. As we got our yes, he met with us in person. He kind of coached us up. So we kind of had like an inside. We knew the right financials and things to talk about. So it's just, I don't know, it just became such a cool resource. And ultimately, with the stuff I do and helping with marketing, I actually helped Daniel and his wife both leave Walmart. So there's kind of a funny full circle moment there when he became a full-time entrepreneur and his wife now works at HGTV as a designer, using some of the same strategies I use in marketing. So that's one of my favorite stories, but it just speaks to that whole power of relationships. You just never know, one relationship can really literally change your life.
Yeah. I mean, it's putting yourself out there also,
yeah,
because a lot of people, very intelligent people with a lot of great ideas, have businesses, but they're afraid to, you know, either they're introverted or they have anxiety. They're afraid to kind of put themselves out there regardless. I think even if let's keep it to podcasts that are remote, like we're doing now. You don't have to be in studio. I mean, I've done a few in studio, but it's a little bit more intimidating being in a set and having people there and kind of behind the scenes.
I've been on live radio, live TV before. It is definitely a lot more pressure than something like this, where it can be edited. You can prepare for the interview. You can listen to other interviews and really know the flow of the show. But yeah, to your point, go ahead.
Yeah, like this is more intimate. You know, it's a one-on-one conversation. You know, depending on the show, usually it's more low key. It's a natural conversation. Whereas, you know, sometimes if you're, in the studio for a show, it might not be a podcast format. You may be reading off a teleprompter, or you have talking points, which, I mean, you can have talking points to refer to in terms of kind of key things you want to focus on. But I think a listener also kind of senses when they're listening the authenticity of the conversation. If that person is like, you know, selling them BS, or are they, you know, about what they're talking about, regardless if it's, you know, a business expertise, a certain expertise in terms of, you know, what you do, or like if you've experienced something. Because, you know, I've spoken about things like digital marketing, but I've also spoken about things about being a first generation immigrant and the journey from where I came from, Ukraine, when I was 5 to here, yeah, you know, fostering 29 kids and, you know, people have reached out, you know, I hear the sincerity and the passion about the topic that you're talking about. And I think that's one of those things that you can't convey in other mediums as well.
Yeah. And again, it's the value of that scarcity, or it's the value of the format. And what I started to say is, I've had shows too, where I've been interviewed by, like, how do you overcome a scarcity mindset? You know, like I grew up very poor, alcoholic dad, abusive. My mom and dad got divorced when I was in high school, and then he got sober. They remarried when I was near the end of my college time, and my wife and I were their attendants at their second wedding. So I mean, that's a cool story, and like people can remember that sort of thing. And I'll have people reach out, like, yeah, I dealt with that too. Like I dealt with an abusive childhood, or we were really poor, and I had. Like I literally never even like knew the word entrepreneur until I was like out of college. So there's a lot of cool like stories that can come out in this format that you can't do it. Like I could write all day. I could think of doing videos all day, and those sort of like true, interesting, emotional stories don't come out outside of a like interview conversation sort of format.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you should always be a resource and not necessarily ask for anything in return. Like your situations that things have come full circle. It got your foot in the door in Walmart. And then in turn, you help those people leave and help them kind of start the next phase of their professional lives and what they're doing in their lives. So just because something comes packaged the way you may not want it doesn't mean it's not, you know, a blessing, or it may not lead to what you truly want to do or whatever you want to scale in the future. And like, you know, some situations I try to leave every, let's say, business deal or opportunity, if it can be kind of salvaged, on good terms, you know, keeping that door open and potentially having a future conversation, because even, you know, I've tried to help as many people as possible, but there's been situations where, you know, this is something that I may not talk to this person again about, but it's like, let me be the bigger person. Then in turn, you know, 5-10 years later, they'll reach out of nowhere. Like, you've been on my mind. Like, well, we had a bad experience, like, you know, 12 years ago that you shook my hand, made a verbal commitment, and then on paper, you know, something was totally different. And we, you know, we haven't talked since, but now you're bringing me this opportunity. It's just things like that. You know, just always be open. And if you can, you know, just be nice and, you know, don't hold grudges in business and in general.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that came up for me with that. I feel like one of my great life lessons, one of the things I would love the audience to take away from this, it happens like an epiphany for me. It happened in the summer of 2017. So I had been leading up to this idea of leaving engineering, but it was just faltering. I mean, I was making some side income, but I was like working 60 hours a week at work. And it was like, how's this really ever going to happen? So finally in 2017, what hit me all at once, which sounds obvious, but it wasn't to me at the time, was, hey, guess what? Like, you could leave, and then if you don't like the alternative, you can always come back. Like there's a few permanent decisions, you know, like, you know, hopefully parenting and like maybe some religious vocations. There's a few things that are permanent. Almost nothing is. So if you, as long as you do it in a wise way, like you just said, like you could always come back. Like I'm not leaving engineering because I'm bad at it. I'm leaving it because I want to try something different. And so that was big for me. And so that allowed me, gave me the courage to say, all right, for 6 months, we're really going to do this. And by January 1st, we're going to have a decision to make as a family based on, so I worked extremely hard for 6 months, had a lot of open communication with my wife and kids about that and what it was going to be like. And then we made that choice, and, you know, the rest is history, I guess. But when I left, it wasn't like I said, see, I'll give you 2 weeks notice, because I was in a pretty important professional position. I said, look, I'll stick around until we find a replacement. I'll help you hire the replacement. I'll help you train the replacement. And I did that, and I left on really good terms. Actually had some contract work for a while that was very useful in 2020 when I lost all my clients because of COVID. But that was a huge blessing that I maintained that relationship and left on good terms, to the point that the guy I hired as my replacement texted me like literally yesterday out of nowhere and was just like, if you ever think about coming back, you just name your price, and I don't want to go back. But the fact that that's still there as an option, when you're an entrepreneur, that's pretty comforting. Like, I have to really, if I really screw up my business, like I do have that as an alternative still. So,
yeah. And you build that skill set. Like you said, you did something for, you know, over, you know, a decade and a half,
yeah,
and other things in terms of other opportunities. So you don't lose that that skill set or that knowledge base. Like you said, you can always pivot back if you really wanted to, but it leads you to be able to do that. You know, you can take a different course when you've already done it and you've already built those relationships.
Yeah. And I think also if someone's listening and they're like curious about trying something different, or they're curious about entrepreneurship, or maybe they're an entrepreneur and they're just curious about having a different offer or whatever, like be open to iterations of what you already do. And so again, this is bringing this up for me now. I hadn't really considered it. So when I was an engineer, I got invited to go teach as an adjunct professor at the university I graduated from, right? So I was teaching master's level. I did traffic engineering, like specialty courses. And I was hesitant. It was a lot of work for not a great pay. But what I realized in doing that is like, I actually like teaching a lot. Like I didn't really, my wife is a special ed by career. She's an elementary special ed teacher. And what she does every day, or what she did every day, I was like, I'd never be a teacher. But at that level, I actually really enjoyed it. And I found that when the students would ask me questions, I was pretty good on my feet. And so I think about that, those experiences, and it really prepared me well for what I do now, which I lead these mastermind groups with entrepreneurs. And so it's online, but it's basically the same thing, right? I'm still preparing, I'm teaching, I'm answering questions on the spot. And while doing engineering, I kind of developed that skill set and realized I had some talent there, which again, you know, this is many years later. Now I'm using that and just in a different format, but you don't lose the skill set when you invest in it. And I think that's a really good takeaway and mindset for people, that like, be curious. Don't say yes to too many things, but don't be afraid to say yes to some things that maybe you don't feel super comfortable with in the moment, because you never know when that tool and your tool belt's going to come in handy later.
Yeah, I agree. So I really appreciate you stopping by today. Can you let the audience know how they can find you or anything else you have going on?
Sure. Yeah. So the easiest place on social media, I'm really active on LinkedIn, Dustin Reichman, R-I-E-C-H. Yeah, my home base though for my business is simplesuccesscoaching.com. So if you have an interest in partnership marketing and podcast guesting, especially, like that's what I do all the time. So I'm happy to help anyone out, and a lot of free resources, a lot of introductions I can make if there's specific shows that you have a desire to get on. So yeah, simplesuccesscoaching.com. My email is dustin@simplesuccesscoaching.com if someone wants to reach out directly.
Awesome. Thanks again for stopping by.
Sure thing, Roman. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you by Nova Zora Digital. Find out how Nova Zora Digital can help your company grow online. Learn more at NovaZoraDigital.com. Until next time, all you digital savages.